What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Polytalk is back to unpack the big questions like, why is it hard to get medicine you need in the Pacific?
It came to a point where he was admitted where he got blood poisoning. He needed antibiotics for that, and that was not available.
Join me, Scott Whitehair, on Polytalk.
Search up Polytalk in your favorite podcast app to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
Talofa, malo, bulavinaka, and good morning. This is Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Belinda Cora, coming to you live from Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. Coming up today, familiar faces are returned to Tonga's parliament after half of all voters stayed home on election day.
36% turnout, I guess you can work on that. I'm just glad to get over that and now look forward to looking at whether we can play a role in government.
Also, Australia drops its bid with the Pacific to host next year's COP31 UN climate talks.
I'm very disappointed, and people back in the islands are like downhearted by this decision.
And the Catholic Diocese looks to the Pacific to fill gaps in North Queensland churches. All that and more coming up. I'm Belinda Cora. Let's get started. We start our show in Tonga, where the Electoral Commission says only half of Tonga's 65,000 registered voters took part in yesterday's polling. Despite the low turnout, election day was peaceful and a number of new MPs were voted into parliament in seats for both the nobles and the people's representatives. Among the big names returned to office were caretaker Prime Minister Aisake Eke, while the constituents of Tongatapu III returned Siaosi Sovaleni back to parliament. The former Prime Minister told ABC's Marion Kupu that he would not rule out having another go at the top job.
It's been a few times that I actually won the seat for Tongatapu, but the feeling is still the same. You know, amazing that Tongatapu still believe in you and trust you to actually represent them. Well, we probably go to better in terms of turnout. You know, with 36% turnout, I guess we can work on that. I'm just glad to get over that and now look forward to actually looking at whether we can play a role in government.
What is something that you would work on or have changed in the upcoming parliament?
No, I think, as I always said, education will be something key. Helping the poor will be also something that I look forward to actually doing. But building better relationship with my fellow MPs, see whether we can work together. And also at the same time, building bridges between us and people that were on different sides before.
The next process now is to elect the Prime Minister. How is that looking for you? Would you put your hand up?
Well, again, as I said before, it actually depends on the views of my fellow MPs. As you probably know, I probably can do the job, but again, it depends on what they want and who they want to be in cabinet. So I look forward to actually having that discussion with my fellow MPs, not just people, but also, the nobles rep.
That was former Prime Minister Siaosi Sovaleni speaking there following the counting of votes. For more on Tonga's election results, we now cross over to our reporter in the capital, Nuku'alofa, Marianne Kupu. Very good morning to you, Marianne.
Malalele Belinda, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Na good pela morning lo you. I realize it's been a busy week for you, and I'm really happy that we could end the week together here on the show.
Oh, yes, me too, likewise.
Marianne, former Prime Minister Siaosi Sovaleni and caretaker Prime Minister Aisake Eke are back in. No surprise there, but what were some of the surprises that you would like to talk to us about the winners and the losers for the 17 people's representative seats?
Yes, definitely it wasn't a surprise for us, for current Prime Minister, now caretaker Prime Minister Isaac Eke, and former Prime Minister Sa Sovaleni to be in. Another fact that I can also add on to that, they held the strongest results by percentage with the voting last night, which they held a 72% each with their vote. There were so other interesting changes that we experienced also. This, having said this, this will have two new nobles coming in to the nine reserve noble seats in parliament. That was a very big move or big change in that we witnessed yesterday. The longest serving noble parliamentarian lost his seat yesterday, having to be in parliament since 1992. He did not make it in this time. Another interesting fact that we also saw last night, that only one woman from the eight running women candidate got in parliament last night. Overall, there are eight new members in parliament that they will be starting in the next parliament term.
Thanks, Marianne. I also hear that there are two new nobles elected to the office. Can you tell us a little bit more about them?
Yeah, sure. So these two new nobles are of Lord Maafu and Lord Behala. The significance of these two nobles is particularly with Lord Maafu as the head of their clan or a clan, and it's the biggest clan here in Tonga. To try to explain where they stand is, in general, Lord Maafu is also very young, I should say. He's only in his early 40s. And Lord Maafu is, I would say, Lord Maafu's grandfather is the late Tupo the Fourth's brother, only brother. So there is a relationship amongst the nobles, but particularly with this noble, with the royal family. Another fact that I can say with this Lord Maafu is his first cousin is the Speaker of the House. and all these interactions amongst the nobles, yes, they're becoming stronger and stronger. What we're looking forward to on the ground after talking to a lot of the voters last night, especially with the youth, is they're excited. They see young parliamentarian or young MPs making into parliament yesterday, particularly with this Lord Maafu and, of course, the current Speaker of the House. We've also have the only woman MP entering, which is of almost the youngest so far in parliament, with only early 40s to mid 40 years old.
Thanks, Marianne. And Marianne, election was peaceful. How did counting go? Were there any issues?
I won't say there was any issue with the counting. I think I would say that the issue had to come with registered names in the list exceeded, or they did not, the Electoral Commission did not update their list. For example, there were a lot of diseased people's names still on the list for voting. Other issues that I've been told last night was some people did register, but their name was not on the list. And there were also people that have migrated overseas. Their names were on the list also. So there would be a stench on the percentage of the voters. Having said that, there has also been a worrying number of people or voters turning up yesterday to vote, having only almost over 30,000 people turned up to vote in the whole of Tonga, out of almost 65,000 people registered. So there should be a big change, and there should be an update on the stats and percentage of voters to eliminate the disease, eliminate the migration, so that we can have the actual number of voters in our system.
So, Marian, what's the mood like in the capital now that the results are out?
So right now, we are activating our caretaker government, which is basically they're just there to hold the fort without making any major decision until we select our new prime minister, which would take a few days' time. Normally, a interim speaker will be selected by the king. This interim speaker of the house will have to be someone that is not a member of parliament. And he or she will call on the 26 new members of parliament to sit in parliament to select and vote in secret our next prime minister. But, you know, behind the scene, before we actually get to the prime minister, it's this is the time, or us here in Tonga, we call it, this is the horse trading time for us, as there are interested names coming out for prime minister from the nobles, and there's also interesting names coming out to be prime minister from the people's representatives.
So I guess the big question now is, who are the likely candidates to be prime minister?
Lord Vaea have mentioned publicly that former Speaker of House and also former Prime Minister of Tonga, Lord Tuvano, is interested. He also mentioned the current Speaker of the House, Lord Fafanua, is also interested. There's also, like you heard the audio played by former Prime Minister Sovaleni, if that's what the House want for him to be Prime Minister, he knows he can do the job. Why not? There's also other the current name, which is the current Prime Minister, is also still willing to continue on his premiership.
So, Marian, how is the Prime Minister selected in Tonga, and when will we have an answer on who will be the Prime Minister?
Like I mentioned, Belinda, it would take 7 to 10 days for the King to select an interim speaker. That interim speaker will then have to call on the House sitting, and all the 26 MPs will be present to select the Prime Minister, voted in secret, and they will have to get more than half of their votes for their candidates. Normally, there's always just two names, of course, put up for Prime Minister, and the votes are done in secret. If we do not have the majority of voters to the Prime Minister in Parliament at the special sitting, they will keep voting until they get the majority. And then they will be taken to the King, and then the King will officiate the selection, and then the Prime Minister will then come back to the House, or the Prime Minister will then have to select his cabinet members. So we're looking for the next few weeks. I won't be surprised if it's our Christmas. I'll be spending Christmas in Parliament this year, Belinda.
Thanks, Marian, and thank you for joining us. It was so good talking to you.
Ofatu, Belinda.
This ABC's reporter in Tonga, Marian Kupu. And you're on Pacific Beat. I'm Belinda Kora, coming to you live from Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea. After days of speculation, Australia's government finally confirmed it was dropping its joint bid with the Pacific to host next year's COP31 UN climate talks. Pacific activists warn of the missed opportunity, with the global talks now leading to Turkey next year. Among those voicing their frustration is Palau President Saren Gal-Webs Jr., who called a decision a disappointment to the Pacific. ABC's Finau takes a look at how the day unfolded yesterday.
No, we're very pleased with the outcome. Turkey will host, but Australia, by having the COP presidency for negotiations, will be in a very strong position.
After days of speculation, Australia withdrew its bid to host next year's COP31 climate summit, ceding rights to Turkey. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese confirmed the decision in an announcement yesterday. He says concessions had been made that would see the summit's presidency be given to Australia, and that a COP pre-meeting would be held in the Pacific Islands.
That will enable us to invite world leaders to make sure that the issues confronting this region, the very existence of island states such as Tuvalu and Kiribati, the issue of our oceans, all of those issues will be front and centre. We will benefit from having Pacific issues and the issues confronting Australia that we know Australia is particularly vulnerable for the extreme weather events.
Despite the concessions, which the PM has played up as a win, the news has been met by disappointments.
I'm very disappointed, and people back in the islands are like downhearted by this decision.
Maximilian Teja, a volunteer with the Kiribati Climate Action Network, says there had been excitement at the prospect of a Pacific COP summit in Australia.
All of our people back at home are like assuming that it's going to be happening in Australia, and that's where they're going to be like, you know, making more impactful voices to tell their stories more and to make their voices heard. We thought that if Australia is going to host COP 31, especially for us young activists and all, we're being felt left off.
In his COP 30 address at Belem, Tuvaluan Home Affairs Minister Maina Talia condemned the United States government for its stance on the climate crisis, and he reiterated the urgency to address it.
I must speak with painful honesty. We are already drowning. Our survival depends on urgent global solidarity.
COP meetings have offered an opportunity for Pacific Island governments and civil society representatives to voice their frustrations, giving them a platform to describe the devastation their communities were enduring, from sea level rising to tropical cyclones.
Our people deserve more than promises.
Tuvaluan climate activist Aseki Tasitusi says there was anticipation that having COP in Australia and the Pacific would allow world leaders to visit communities directly and see for themselves the severity of the climate crisis in Pacific nations.
Australia not hosting COP30 feels like a missed chance, a missed vodka, like you missed the plane. Yeah, it is. And the world, they are ready to step up for us. Climate change isn't politics. Climate change, it's our home, it's our land, and our family at risk. Hosting COP has been a moment for Australia to stand with the Pacific in a meaningful way.
And that was Finau Finolo from ABC team. Closer to home, Papua New Guinea's Foreign Minister Justin Kachinko was among Pacific leaders who lobbied hard for the COP to come to the region. He spoke to me yesterday saying it was disappointing that Turkey did not withdraw despite the backing Australia got. Mr. Kachinko says Australia's proposal would have given the region a louder voice in climate negotiations.
Because we don't emit anything at all. And we need to show the rest of the world what they're doing to us in the Pacific, in our region. The big emitters, those that are polluting the world, need to see and need to hear from our people in the region of the Pacific.
Is this a sad day for the Pacific?
It's a big disappointment. It's a big disappointment for the Pacific, knowing that we are the ones that are truly affected by climate change, and the big emitters want to talk, but they don't want to action anything. And it's becoming a big concern because previous COP meetings have ended up with no agreement, no solution. And, you know, enough of talking. Let's get on with the job. Let's implement strong, firm decisions that will affect and support and look after those that are not causing climate change throughout the world. The Pacific would be the perfect place to host it, the perfect place. And we thank Australia. We thank Australia greatly for them allowing us all to come together as one. But at the end of the day, Australia's made a choice to pull out, but strategically, so that it can still be part of COP, the region can still be part of COP, and hopefully we get some better outcomes. We get better outcomes that we have got over many previous years. Honestly, COP has done nothing to help climate change from its previous meetings. There's been no resolutions that have been implemented that other countries and the Pacific and the region have been able to implement and go forward with. So we need to look at something else now. We need to change what we're doing, how we're looking at these things. And that's why COP in Brazil was so important, because we had a rainforest nation, one of the biggest in the world, hosting it. And that's why our Prime Minister went across. Our Prime Minister went across because we are the third biggest rainforest nation in the world. You got the Amazon, Congo, and then Papua New Guinea. And the situation is that prevention is better than cure. Save our rainforests. Make sure they are safe for the long-term benefit of the future generations of our world. Our rainforests are cleaning the air, making it safe for us to breathe, and keeping the temperatures down. So let's put a different aspect to this. Let's fix the problem first.
So, Minister, would you be going to Turkey to participate in that meeting?
That's a decision that our Prime Minister will make with the Environmental and Climate Change Minister. We will support the decisions of what our government comes to the lead up of COP in Turkey. For us, it's about supporting a united approach, for the benefit of not individual countries, but the whole world.
PNG's Foreign Minister Justin Kachinko speaking to me there. Palau's President Sarungal Whips Jr. also expressed deep disappointment that COP won't be in the region. Meanwhile, the idea of a pre-COP meeting to be held in the Pacific is generating some excitement, according to Dr. George Carter, an Australian National University researcher and one of Samoa's delegates at COP 30 in Brazil. Here he is speaking with reporter Lucy Cooper.
Yes, so I see this as a mixed COP. It still is an Australia COP, Australia-led in terms of the presidency, and that has been announced now officially by Minister Bowen an hour ago. But we also have a compromise in terms of Turkey having the rights to host as the venue in Ankara to host Conference of the Parties. But at the same time, we also have the Pacific that it will host the pre-COP or the pre-negotiations, which will be held in the Pacific. And part of that compromise, as part of what was announced by Bowen, is support for the Pacific Resilience Facility, where right now we don't have Turkey as a supporting partner. But yeah.
How do you feel about the outcome in terms of it being a mixed COP?
This is a very much an unusual announcement, where you have sort of three different parties involved in the presidency. Now, we wished that it could have been better, that it was all hosted in Australia with the Pacific, that we could have had more input by our people. People who are not part of COP to be present, especially if it was held in Australia. However, this is a compromising moving forward in terms of involving all parties. And what's important is that the work is not over, because what we've seen over the last 2-3 years as Australia has tried to work with the Pacific in terms of diplomatic discussions and bringing the Pacific along and providing some form of governance and consultation. But especially in the last week and a half in trying to involve the Pacific, there's been a lot of movement or way forward in terms of how that discussion has been. So that's good. And I think that's important as well now that Bowen, Australia, will lead the negotiations in 2026 for the Pacific. This is not the end of participation and Pacific style of leadership. It just, you know, as Pacific negotiators were conversing as the announcement was officially made, is that how do we connect the Pacific with Turkey? And how do we make Turkey stand up for the Pacific in terms of integrity? Not only just providing funding for the Pacific Resilience Facility, but also in having a central place in its hosting of COP. That may be in terms of the pavilion, that may be in terms of ensuring that more Pacific participants are there, but also it's also the Pacific working with Australia, ensuring that the key issues from the Pacific are taken up by the Australian presidency. So we already have those discussions, we already have sort of that open channel that has taken place in the last 2-3 years. Now we need to see this implemented. But there's also another question on who will host pre-COP. In the past, we've had Fiji host pre-COP in Nandi, but there are other Pacific countries like Samoa or like Solomon Islands or like Papua New Guinea that could actually host pre-COP. So that's another level of discussions and level of diplomacy the Pacific needs to undertake, is how do we host and how do we make sure the Pacific issues are central, but also our type of diplomacy is part of it. So those are things that are starting to come to mind as, you know, the announcement is finally made and officially made open to the public, and we can start now planning.
Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister of Australia, says the COP31 compromise with Turkey is an outstanding result. Do you think it can be as effective as it would be if Australia was to solely host it as they wanted for next year?
It would have been more outstanding if Australia had hosted it, you know, in terms of home ground, in terms of full control of diplomatic resources to support the presidency in terms of facilitating the discussions. That would have been the more outstanding result. Nevertheless, what we have is a situation where Australian diplomacy or an Australian-led facilitation of negotiations with the Pacific, but on foreign soil. And this will be the first ever. In fact, this has never happened before. So it is a multilateral experiment. It will need that flair. But the Pacific being the moral compass in terms of bringing integrity as the conscience of the regime, for such an experiment to happen, they also need to be involved.
That was Salah, Dr. George Carter, a climate action expert who is currently attending COP30 in Brazil. It's that time of the morning where we take a look at what is making headlines across the region. And to do that, I'm joined by producer Kyle Evans. Very good morning, Evans. Very good morning, Kyle. How are you?
I'm well, Bells. You're actually not the first person to call me Evan, our executive producer's name. I've had many live guests actually call me that as well. But no, very well. And it's good to chat with you again. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while. Let's get straight into it. Kyle, U.S. federal officials have made an appeal to Palau lawmakers to accept deportees from the United States.
Yeah, that's right, Bell. So the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State has made an appeal to the people of Palau to accept Washington's proposal to resettle those 75 deportees, despite the fact Palau's Congress and the Council of Chiefs have already repeatedly turned it down. Now,
among the reasons that Palau declined the proposal was due to the vagueness of the plan and the lack of clarity over the types of people they were set to inherit, whether they were criminals or visa overstayers, things like that. Anyway, the US Deputy Secretary has now moved to clear up some of those concerns by reassuring Palauans that those bound for transfer have no criminal record other than immigration breaches, and went on to say that Palau would retain full veto power even after accepting the US proposal if they choose to do so. Now, it's worth noting, Bells, that Palau's president, Sarangal Whips Jr., was actually on board with accepting these deportees, saying they could help fill the country's labour gaps. So it's going to be interesting to see whether this clarity from the US has sort of any impact on Congress or the COC as to whether they, you know, change their mind on that. But yeah, time will tell.
A global nursing shortage is being keenly felt in Fiji. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, real concerning, this one. So the International Council of Nurses has warned that Fiji is facing a severe strain from the global nursing shortage, with recent statistics revealing that the country has lost up to a third of its nurses to overseas migration. Excuse me. Now, the reality was laid bare when the ICN Director of Nursing Policy and Practice, David Stewart, who actually visited Fiji this week, said that despite 30 million nurses worldwide, the sector still lacks at least 6 million nurses to meet global demand. And Fiji is among the hardest hit countries. And it's that, and it's retention, not recruitment, which is actually its biggest challenge. And that's essentially because what's happening is that nurses from these red listed countries like Fiji are seeking opportunities abroad, which places more pressure on those who remain, causing those who remain to essentially burn out and then seek opportunities elsewhere in what's kind of like a vicious cycle. So the ICN is currently working with Pacific nations to address those worsening retention and workforce fatigue issues.
And in sports, PNG's London takeover continues with yet another PNG hunter joining the London Broncos. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, this is my favourite ongoing story right now, Bells. I don't know if you've been following this one, but there's been a new PNG player joining the London Broncos virtually every day this week. This time it's the big prop forward, Capinius. Sorry, I didn't say his name there. Capinius, who is the latest Papua New Guinean to sign on the dotted line in the capital. So he's going to join a number of Kumul stars who have already signed, not to mention the Kumul's coach, Jason Demetrio. But in some further news, Belinda, I've seen a number of outlets report that the Broncos have actually got three more PNG players to announce in Jeremiah Sembikin, Robert Matthias, and the great Nana McDonald. And apparently it's all being spearheaded not by Jason Demetrio, the coach, but by the great man himself, Darren Lockyer, who actually bought a 90% stake in the London Broncos quite recently and is intent on rebuilding it after it was relegated from the English Super League. So he's trying to get them back there and looks like he's got a PNG plan to do it, which is, just a fantastic story, I think.
Kyle, thank you very much for that awesome news wrap this morning and for joining us especially. Thank you very much.
Not a problem at all, Bells.
It's Friday the 21st of November and you're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Belinda Cora coming to you live from Port Moresby. And if you're just joining in or tuning in, Tonga's Electoral Commission says only half of the kingdom's 65,000 registered voters took part in yesterday's polling, but some big names were returned to parliament, such as the PM, CIOC Sovaleni.
It's been a few times that I actually won the seat for Toa Taptol, but the feeling is still the same. You know, amazing that Toa Taptol still believe in you and trust you to actually represent them.
Still to come on today's show, we hear about the Australian state looking to the Pacific to fill gaps in the Catholic Church. And we also catch up with students forced to flee Goroka University after violence broke out on campus.
In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favourite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots and hip-hop to house music, from across the era to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
In the Fale, Friday afternoons at 3 PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Welcome back to Pacific Beat. Since 1975, the number of Australians who identify as Christians have halved, leaving many communities without church leaders or services. In North Queensland, the diocese has turned to its close neighbour to help fill gaps, with ministers from the Pacific now making up to half of its full-time workforce. Blending faith, culture and community has led to fruitful outcomes, as Lucy Cooper reports.
It's a Sunday afternoon in Eyre, a rural town about an hour south of Townsville in North Queensland. In the All Saints Anglican Church, the stained glass windows are beaming from the glow of the sunset. But this isn't the average Australian church service. It's the monthly Melanesian service for the seasonal workers.
It's like we are creating a home or space, a safe space away from home, that they are free to come and share whatever the challenges that they are going through, and direct them to the right places that they can seek help.
That's Reverend Jeffrey Akwai. He moved from the Solomon Islands 3 years ago to serve as the priest of St Paul's Anglican Church in Proserpine and the wider Whitsundays region.
We as Melanesians, islanders, we come in and we try to do what we could do in this context and continue to maintain the mission and ministry of the church wherever we are. So as Melanesians, wherever we go, we bring faith, community and culture with us.
The Melanesian service was established 4 years ago to provide a safe space for workers under the Pacific Australia Labour Mobility Scheme. John Mamarai from Solomon Islands is working in Eyre to earn money to support his family and build a home for them. He said the service makes him feel like he's back in Melanesia.
One important thing about that is to bring them together so that in the weekends we have Bible study on Saturdays, so that to bound them from going out to the clubs and the pubs and all those things, yeah, so that they can keep their money for their family.
Reverend Akwai isn't in Australia just to support Palm Scheme workers. He's helping fill a gap. Census data since 1971 showed the number of Australians who identify as Christian has halved from 86% to 44% in 2021.
It is really sad to see that the church here in Australia is going through a shortage of priests and people who should be there to lead the church. So we are so happy to come share the faith.
He was brought to Australia by the Bishop of North Queensland, Keith Joseph. All up, there are 11 ministers from the Solomon Islands, PNG and Vanuatu serving parishes across the diocese.
Together they make up half of my full-time workforce in the diocese.
He said without them, the diocese and the volunteer services it provides, op shops, support to aged care homes and pastoral care to seasonal workers, would collapse.
So you're looking at each parish providing between $200,000 and $1 million of volunteer labour into their communities each year. So all that would go if we didn't have them.
These Pacific priests are so valued by the community that a migration pathway was set up between the diocese and the Church of Melanesia. It's also somewhat of an ironic situation playing out across regional Australia, where religious leaders are recruited from countries that were converted by Christian missionaries from the West.
In the Pacific, you had some of the most rapid, like the quickest and the most enthusiastic uptake of Christianity. And it is really notable that Pacific Islands church authorities are taking leadership in the societies that used to send the missionaries.
That's Matt Tomlinson, an ANU professor of anthropology and director of the School of Culture, History and Language. He said it's hard to determine how Christianity reached the Pacific.
The answer is, on one hand, yeah, missionaries had to come and say, hey, there's something new. But a huge part of the story is Pacific Islanders saying, we're looking for something new and we're going to work with this in our terms.
Reverend Dr. Sepharosa Carroll is a theologian at Charles Sturt University. She says more than 90% of the Pacific population is now Christian, blurring the lines between religion and culture.
You know, Pacific understanding of faith or religion is that things are all interconnected. And I think that one of the things that that colonialism and Christian missions did that was a huge disservice was the creation of a duality between what is sacred and what is profane. But in Indigenous understanding, everything's interconnected. To not have the church, to not have spirituality is to lose your soul.
For many cultures, including those in the Pacific, Dr. Carroll said Christianity was inseparable from colonisation.
In some cases, the Christian mission and colonisation sort of accompanied each other, and the missionary was the chief promoter of civilization. In the Pacific, I would say that the process of encountering the gospel was really one first of encountering colonialism, in which the understanding was that in order to be Christian, you must first be civilized, which equates to you must be kind of westernized.
Now in Australia, to account for dwindling numbers, Pacific Islanders are bringing their style of faith to churches across the country.
I think that what they bring, you know, in a sense is, you know, the gift of their culture, the gift of the passion of their faith, but it also brings them an uplift in their faith. Because there is something special about feeling like you belong when you're worshiping. Nothing worse than being in a service, congregational service, where you feel like an alien because everything's so alien to you.
Back in North Queensland, Reverend Jeffrey Akwai said faith is something that just can't be left behind.
Coming over here, it seems that we're living in two different contexts, and it's hard to live out your culture because it's always part of us.
He's grateful for the locals who attend the monthly services, welcoming the Melanesian expression of faith and musicality.
It kind of brings the local parishioners in as well. So usually we have a combined Melanesians and Australians coming in. And our friends here, they really enjoyed our worship as well. And they felt that they had been nourished by that singing and dancing way of worship that we bring with us.
Reverend Jeffrey Akwai, the priest of St. Paul's Anglican Church in Proserpine, North Queensland, ending that story from Lucy Cooper. More than 50 Bougainville students studying at the University of Goroka in the Western Highlands province have been repatriated home 2 weeks after violence broke out on campus. They are among the 7,000 students who have had their academic year cut short after fighting broke out between members of the public and students. Although peace has been restored, many, like final year student Mizikiel Isaac, say they're struggling to return their lives to normalcy.
What can you tell us about the fight that happened in Goroka between the students and the locals just a week ago?
Recently, a fight broke out in Goroka between the university students and the local landowners here at Ato Market. It has started when a student from Western Islands province, who was from Tabul Nevile and was heading to the final year closing function night, so he was stopped by drunk locals who demand money from him. The situation quickly, like violent, and a clash erupted between the two groups, with both sides feeling strong about their rights.
And this is not the first time for such incidents to happen in Goroka, maybe between the locals and the students. You've been there for a few years now. You would see similar situations, okay?
This is not the first time such incident that happened. The similar conflicts have occurred in the past between the students and the locals.
What about you? And where did you go to get away from the fights, just to be safe?
Okay, during the fight, the students from other provinces were assisted by their like leaders or sponsors to stay safe. Like for my case, I went down to Lae, Morobe province, to my sister's house and stayed there until the things came down. like as a self-sponsor. I've called my parents, like I just want to move down to late for my safety warranty. So I called them, like they have to assist me with a bus fee. So they send me a bus fee and I travel down to Lay and I stay there. And until the fight, like when it comes to normal, I came out back again.
And so as you're speaking to us, you are back in Goroka now. How are you feeling?
Yeah, now that I'm back in Goroka after the fight, I feel like a mix of emotions. I'm relieved that the situation has settled, but also worried about the impact it might have on our studies and the community relations.
Do you have issues with accommodation or things like that because now you're back in Goroka?
During the fight, like actually, I'm residing where the eviction occurred. So I was renting at auto market where the incident happened. So I lost my laptop and all my belongings, like laptop bag, all my like good dresses and shirt. I lost everything. So yeah, I showed it and I went down and just came here. Like at the meantime, like I'm looking for a place to like, you know, reside. So I came up to the school and waiting for the welfare for them to like at least help me or find me a house for me to get accommodated.
And like you said, you're a final year student. How has it affected your studies and have you been in contact with your family?
As a final year, my studies have been like affected because I had to miss classes and focus on staying safe. But I've been in contact with my family and like they're supporting me through this tough time.
Do you have any plans after you graduate? I know you're studying to become a teacher, but any plans on any prospects, good prospects for the future?
I'm like willing to become a teacher, but after I graduate, like I plan to, you know, pursue further studies in chemistry and like eventually work as a researcher or chemist in Papua New Guinea to help people of our country, Papua New Guinea.
And the students that were repatriated by their politicians or members or their sponsors, have they returned?
The students traveled back home by their sponsors, so that like some of them, like they came, but majority of the, like roughly 75% of them are still back at their home, so they had to like return to the school. There's a memo circulating through the school saying that they will conduct their final exams through online, but this, like, it's a best of its kind to us, so I don't know that are they like able to in their homes and do that online exams. So in my opinion, like I could say that the university and the local leaders should like work together to stop these fights by holding regular meetings between the students, staff, council members, or even the landowners to talk and build a trust. So a simple code of order should be like created and agreed upon behaviors on the campus and at the market. So the police and the campus security should increase night patrols and have a fast response team. And also a simple reporting system like a phone number or WhatsApp line should be like set up for the students to report issues safely.
University of Goroka student Mizikiel Isaac speaking there to ABC's Godwin Eki.
Want to catch up or listen again to your favourite ABC Radio Australia programs anytime, anywhere? From Pacific Beat to Stories from the Pacific, Nijin Footy to Culture Compass. You can listen to your top shows on your favourite podcast app on the go and for free. Just search for your favourite ABC Radio Australia program in your podcast app and press play. ABC Radio Australia, bringing you more ways to listen.
And that brings us to the end of the Pacific Beat. We'll be back at the same time Monday. That's 6 a.m. PNG time. You can also hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time with Eggy Tupo. Stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia through, because up next is the news. And coming up after that is Nija Daily. You'll find our top stories on our website. Just type Pacific Beat and Radio Australia in your search engine. I'm Belinda Cora. Have a great day.